This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Don't miss an episode. Subscribe today.
The Big Interview, intriguing lives, remarkable careers, and gripping stories. I'm Sonal Rupani alongside Chris McCarty and Robbie Greenfield.
This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. The Big Interview with Off Script.
Today we are speaking to a gentleman by the name of Al Corby. And you know what? I'll explain who he is in a moment, but this is why you should stay tuned.
I have to say that I have had the most fun life and probably the greatest profession of anybody I've ever met.
Wow.
Now, the reason we're talking to Al Corby is because it all starts a few years ago when news came out about basically the underground bunker that billionaire Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg has spent years working on. So he has spent a number of years acquiring a large part of land in the secluded Hawaiian island of Kauai. Now, the tech billionaire is not only building a massive estate for himself, this also includes a 5,000, as it's been reported, I should say, a 5,000 square foot underground shelter with its own energy and food supplies and what appears to be a blast resistant door.
Why wouldn't you? If you've got the means, you build yourself a Batman lair.
Yeah, it's a bit depressing that his underground shelter is bigger than the vast majority of people's houses.
Yeah.
As you might expect, I suppose.
His bunker.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
But I mean, is it just me? When you think of bunkers, you think of like the 70s, even the early 80s, this kind of Cold War era threat
bunker.
Of nuclear war. I mean, you know, there's a reason people had these underground bunkers. Why do we need them today? It seems a bit extra, I think. But anyways, we'll get into this because apparently when the news came out about this $260 million project, it was good news. It was big business for people in the bunker industry because other people thought, well, if Zuck's got one, I need to get myself one too. Anybody who's got enough money seems to be interested in getting themselves an underground shelter, a fortified shelter specifically. And now, doomsday prepping, nothing new, as we described, but it's not exactly anymore the image that you might conjure from decades past, right? Not the Spartan environment, a place that you think maybe wouldn't be very inviting. You wouldn't want to spend too long there. I mean, that's all changing because there was a piece in The Hollywood Reporter which describes features like rotating fireplaces straight out of Indiana Jones. I know.
I know, right?
Is that necessary? Is that going to keep you safe somehow, rotating fireplace? I got in touch with Al Corby. He is president and founder of a Virginia-based company called SAFE, which stands for Strategically Armored and Fortified Environments.
Like what he's done there.
Yeah. But how, first of all, does somebody get into this line of work?
Well, as a little boy, I got lucky and I got born into a family that had a higher level of security than the White House back at the time, back in the day. And, you know, when you're a little kid, you just you don't know what you had. You just think everybody's the same. So I wound up going to college in architecture, but I always had this security, this extreme security in the background, just thinking that's how people live.
So can I ask why that was? Yeah. Why did you grow up with an extreme amount of security?
Well, maybe we'll come back to that.
Okay.
But right now, just take it on face value. But we'll see. So it was a great time, let's say. Nobody bothered me when I was a little kid. But when I started doing the architecture, not even thinking about it, I just built in the security into the architecture. And I don't know, I thought I was a pretty good architect and I thought people were coming to me because I was a good architect. Turns out it was because of the extraordinary security that was being built into the place, right? And one thing led to another and whatever, whatever. And let's just say I came to the attention of the Department of Justice and they wanted to have a chat with me. So I went in and chatted with him, and I thought I was in trouble. Basically, the FBI tried to break into a bunch of the properties that I had done and didn't have much luck. After the conversation, instead of getting in trouble, they offered me a job. And it's kind of like the fox guarding the hen house, right? So all of a sudden, I'm designing very high-level, secret, top-secret, classified black ops projects for the federal government. Well, with that, all of a sudden you start meeting presidents, heads of other nations, billionaires, oligarchs, people like that. And you have little chats with them and they go, can I really have that kind of stuff? And I'm thinking to myself, what? You can have anything you want.
It's been a while since we had a good old-fashioned off-script eccentric on the show, and I'm loving him already.
Yeah, I mean, this was just to kind of get you intrigued. But let's find out a little bit about what he means here, because he said, okay, he's giving people anything they want, is what he said. Curious, what would you want if you did have all the money, if you felt inclined to have your own underground bunker?
Well, speaking of bunkers,
what's a little feature you'd like? I mean, let's put a Rob's a golf simulator in
a little
Rob's
practice bunker.
Yeah.
In a bunker.
Yeah.
My bunker in a bunker. You fancy coming and checking that out?
I mean, I just need a cinema room. Like, if, because obviously you're going to live in this bunker when the world's about to end, right? That's the insinuation. I just need somewhere comfy where I can watch loads of movies.
Yeah, and sort of a back catalogue of all the sports, because there may not be any fresh sports to watch.
That's exactly it.
All right. Well, he told me about an example of what this looks like sometimes. We referenced a pretty outrageous project, it's fair to say.
We get a call from a gentleman, and he said, you know, I've been following you for years, and I want you to do my new home. I said, okay, great. And while we were talking to him in the course of conversation, he happened to mention that he liked jet skiing. I like jet skiing, you know. And he mentioned it again a little later on in the conversation. And then even later on, he mentioned something about when he gets too cold to jet ski, his buddies put on wetsuits and they still go jet skiing. Okay. So I thought, wait a minute. If you really like jet skiing that much, why don't we build a lake? And we'll put an island in the middle of the lake, and we'll have a swing bridge that goes out to it, or a drawbridge, some kind of bridge system. So that when you're out there in the lake, on the island, you've got a degree of security already, because the only way people can get to you is, you know, going across this body of water, right? And then what we can do is introduce some mechanics that if anybody were to try to come across the body of water, we would put a lighter than water flammable liquid on top of the lake, and we just set the lake on fire. So now you're out on your island, and there's this ring of fire around the island, and nobody can get to you. And if they try to come by air, parachuting or, you know, helicopter or whatever like that, we've got water cannons that can take that out.
If they
try to come by air, you've just got to applaud them for their tenacity. You've got to go, you know what? All right, you really want me? Come on, come down and we'll have a nice tear up.
Yeah, you've circumvented the ring of fire around my lair that I currently have.
If you're dedicated enough to come and find me to get a chopper and actually jump out of it, then yeah.
Hollywood A-lister says, I need a ring of fire, and yeah, I absolutely need those water cannons.
Why has that got anything to do with liking jet skiing?
Well, exactly. This is all water-based because it kind of plays on this person's fantasy, really, of loving jet skiing. So you can imagine part of this, and he didn't say this, but it's got to be part of it, the escape has to do with jet skis, right? There's got to be like a whole army of jet skis, a sort of whole load of jet skis on the island where this person can just kind of like have an escape route from.
Of course.
But anyways, he said this project is about 3/4 the way through. He claims there's a documentary being made on it. And he said they're calling it the safest estate in the world. And he referenced the fact that he said it's like being an adult making kids' toys and people are buying it up. I think my response to that to Al was, no disrespect, but that sounds pretty extra.
Yes.
It sounds like something out of James Bond. And he loved the comparison.
We bill it as beyond Bond because, you know, you remember Q, the guy that I really love, right? Well, I've got Todd Parrott. We have our Q in our company, and we run a company like, I don't know, I hate to put it quite that way, but it's kind of like Bond. That's who we have. We have our money, pennies, and the whole gang. And that's what we're here to protect people. When my clients call me in, the most important thing to them are their wife and children. Always their wife and children. They don't care how much money they have. They don't care how many Renoirs they have. It's not about that. It's about the wife and children, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if they're going to do that, they want to do that. They don't want to play a little, and they don't want to protect them a little against maybe something. My job is If it's a tsunami, right? Protect them. If it's a battalion of Navy SEALs, protect them. If it's a pandemic, my heavens, for 55 years, I've been protecting my clients against pandemics. And I can't tell you how many times I've kind of been the butt of conversations at cocktail parties saying, why are we even doing this, right? Boy, did that narrative change about 4 years ago. Not one of my clients worried about COVID.
Oh, Al must have been the cat who got the cream when COVID broke. He was like, told you so.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I did want to find out more about Todd, his so-called Q, and what sorts of devices and contraptions he's whipping up.
You're in your bedroom. You go to sleep at night. You go in your bedroom, you close your door. Somebody breaks in. This is how it always happens. They break in, they come down the hallway, they get to your door, they kick in your door, and all the bad stuff happens, right? Okay. So now you're my client. They break in the house, they come down the hallway, they kick the door. The door doesn't kick in. They put their shoulder in it, it doesn't open. They shoot at it, they can't get through it. They get pretty pissed off. They turn to leave. The other side of the hallway closed down. Now they're trapped in this hallway. And you're in bed with your iPad saying, guys, sit down, be nice little boys until the police come. But they don't. They do something bad, like take out C4 or gasoline or something. The floor opens like that. And they drop 20 feet down into a pit. And then it closes back up. And you go back to sleep. Todd did that.
For true 1960s Bruce Wayne, Batman and Robin style kind of theatrics, a tiger should be down there.
Yeah, but
a trapdoor should open and a tiger should just come out.
Has this bloke Todd got the greatest job? He literally should even make up things as he goes.
I mean, it gets to the point of, you know, what on earth are these people so scared of? And as Al pointed out, the story has really changed. Now, in the 70s, there was a genuine fear about nuclear warfare,
yeah.
Right? You had trainings that people were going through in the U.S. in schools, for example, around this. He said now the number one threat is actually civil unrest. But the biggest thing to cause that, the biggest risk to cause civil unrest is actually cyber attacks or what's called EMPs or electromagnetic pulses. And at this point, you're thinking, well, at least why was, what on earth is that and why is that a problem? Now, an electromagnetic pulse is essentially a brief burst of electromagnetic energy. And what can happen is that can cause disruption to electrical and communications equipment.
They're worried about things that would take out the power grid because we become so dependent upon, I'll say electricity, or if you want to say energy, you know what I mean, right? Mm-hmm. So the narrative for people in the know has really changed. So while I used to be doing bunkers back in the 60s and 70s and 80s that were really aimed to protect against a nuclear hit, I'm not anymore. I mean, we're still doing the bunkers, but it's for a different reason. Now, rather than protecting myself against the Russians or the Chinese, I need to protect myself against my next door neighbor. Do you understand that?
Yeah, there's something kind of tragic in that, though.
It's wildly tragic. We have become technology, the overlords have managed to put a system in place that has made humans, the human population itself, mm-hmm. the weapon, and the victim at the same time. It's amazing what we've done to ourselves in 50 years. Because now, as soon as there's a disturbance in the power grid, think about it. If I was your boyfriend and that happened, I would go out to get you water, food, and medicine at any cost. I would protect you, right? Well, where am I going to go? I'm going to go next door.
Well, the thing is, EMPs, you know, as he was saying, these pulses, why are we scared of them? What's the worry? I did a bit of reading, and it's actually quite intriguing here. He pointed out solar flares. So, you know, every now and then you'll see a burst coming from the sun, like a photo of the sun where there's kind of bursts coming from it. The thing is when The way they impact Earth sometimes is that they're capable of causing magnetic disturbance. This has managed to cause disruptions in the past, places like Quebec, upstate New York. I found an example from the late 80s that caused a 12-hour blackout. Cheaper. So I thought, okay, 12-hour blackout. It's not great, but not really alarming either, is it? But I was reading this recent piece in The New Yorker. It is brilliant. I definitely recommend it. It's called What a Major Solar Storm Could Do to Our Planet. And they said in 2019, the U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency did a bit of a survey of possible disasters, and they concluded that only two natural hazards have the capacity to simultaneously affect the entire nation. One is a pandemic. The other is a severe solar storm. And it definitely, this article made me pay a little bit more attention to the threat our society faces. That was something, a threat that I would have easily dismissed, certainly.
Is your bunker on order?
Exactly. I did ask him how much all of this costs. He said on one extreme, he did a, you know, $1,300 project to secure a house for one of Oprah's viewers. And on the other end, they've just finished one for $103 million for a shelter. He referenced working on the Ambani house, which we discussed, the 27-floor tower that cost a reported $2 billion.
Wow.
He said, you know, usually he wants people to be out in the hinterland with this King Air, which is a 1960s plane that he says, you know, it's not fancy, but it would still fly unaffected by an EMP incident. So he's worked on these kind of out in the middle of nowhere with fire moats, but yeah, also this huge high profile project smack in the middle of Mumbai. But let's wrap up with one of the most extravagant projects he told me that he's done.
We were designing a project, and I'll even tell you where it was, in California on the coast. And the Coastal Commission wouldn't allow you to build a home over 11,000 square feet. Well, you know, this is a family that has servants' quarters that are bigger than 11,000 square feet. And they want to have a place. So I suggested to him, let's just build a really nice 11,000 square foot house. Underneath, let's just build a city. And what we'll do is we'll have a pathway. We'll have the domed roof, you know, with the sky and a jewelry store, right? You know, Winston's or Tiffany, anything you walk into, right? And you know how all the jewelry's there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now in their jewelry store is their jewelry. So instead of having to have things all packed away in drawers and all these kind of, they can have everything right there. When they want to go figure out what they want to wear that night, they just go down and pick out what they want to have, right? And then you go down to the next one, and let's say it's a spa. And it would be some nice spa that you're used to going to. Well, it is a spa. So they have their spa. And you have a movie theater, and they have a theater. You know, two-story seats. I forget how many people.
So are you telling me you basically simulated a whole town?
Yeah. You got this little, they had a pizzeria. They had an antique store. All their family heirlooms are all in there. So instead of having to be packed away in boxes, the grandchildren could come and they could see things and touch them and be a part of heritage. So all these stores that were, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Along this really nice cobblestone walkway with the sky above them was nuclear proof.
Big thanks to him. That was very, very enjoyable. That was a great find there, Sohn.
The Off Script Podcast.
We hope that you enjoyed this episode. Please do go ahead and click subscribe. You can also check out our other podcasts, Time Capsule or The Big Interview. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening, and if you've enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you could subscribe, rate, and give us a review. This podcast was presented by Chris McCarty, Sonal Rupani, and Robbie Greenfield, and produced by Tom Paul Smith. We hope you join us next time on The Big Interview.